Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of The Standard is the Standard. And to my right, we have interview getter extraordinaire, Michael Beck, Canada's very own. What's up, Mike?
Oh, you know, just enjoying the great Canada Day up here. Great, might use that term a little loosely tonight. There hasn't been too much going on. Even went to work today, so just I don't know, just vibing today, just having fun. How are you doing, Lance?
I'm doing well. Let's jump into that real quick before we jump into the program. But I want to give a big shout out to the Oracle of the website and the editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, Dave Schofield. Also, pick up the Big Bro Sco. Dave and Big Bro are out doing their Big Bro and Little Bro thing, so big up to those two. I also want to give a big shout out to podcast director extraordinaire, Mr. 2 a.m. Bad himself, Brian Anthony Davis. Shout out to you, of course, Mike. Big shout out to Tony DeFio, and big shout out to everybody out there that listens to the program and everybody that goes to BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. If you want to participate in the show, you know the ways. Like the show. Like the show. Subscribe to the show. If you want to get your comment in, hit us with a super chat. And as always, the live chat will be on and popping. And before we get into the top of the program, I want to wish everybody out there a happy 4th of July. Please be safe. Let's make sure the nation takes care of the nation. But let's get to Happy Canada Day. Just what is Canada Day? You know, I'm from the States. What's Canada Day? So just explain it in general for us people that are not from the glorious country called Canada.
So to put it most simply, we didn't go to war with the British. We just wrote a letter saying we'd like a constitutional monarchy, so govern ourselves. And 1867, July 1st, that document was submitted to the King of England. And now I think ever since then it was the Dominion of Canada, and then it changed to just Canada, I believe, in 1982, something like that. So ever since, just been our own independent country. So celebrating our independence, not as glorious as kicking some butt in that Revolutionary War, but no, still having fun nonetheless. Some fireworks here and there, maybe some will start popping off soon, but yeah, hopefully we don't miss any at least.
And you have a male model that is currently the leader of your country, Mr. Trudeau, correct?
He is a pretty good looking guy. I'll give him that.
The male model. It seems like the First Lady of the United States had some googly eyes for him in a couple of pictures that I saw. She shot him a couple looks like, hey now, hey. Out back, yeah.
You see that from a lot time to time with Justin. That might be one of those good bartering chips when it comes to negotiating some of those deals. So who knows? Maybe people just get distracted by the eyes. But
wink, wink, nod, nod. But I wanted to ask you, what is the best thing to ever come out of Canada? Now I gave you my answer, so you can't take my answer. But what is the best thing to ever come out of Canada? And you cannot say poutine.
I wouldn't even, that's more of an East Coast thing. Like that being said though, any fast food place, any restaurant really, it's probably on the menu. So that's a little fun fact there. But best thing, tons of sports, obviously one of your things there. The hockey, obviously, big fan, had to wear the Canucks jersey, but kept the black and gold and a little bit of red. So just wanted to keep the theme the same, but that's pretty tough. You know, like the phone came from Canada, the telephone, I believe penicillin even. There's been a lot of great things, but I guess near and dear to my heart, obviously the hockey, love the game. That's my number two. My second passion, I suppose. When Steelers football isn't on, I'm probably tuning into something on ice.
And Bri160071 said it's not bacon.
Our Canadian, it's just back bacon. It's just like it's just lame bacon. Like I don't know. That seems a bit too highly ranked on those Canadian rankings, I suppose.
So let me give you three, and one of these three from Rod Young posted one of my three. He said the three greatest things to ever come out of Canada is Drake, Mario Lemieux, and inventing basketball. And I said basketball was number one, and number two was the great Mario Lemieux, number 66, Super Mario. Those are the two best things, in my opinion, to ever come out of Canada. I don't know about Drake, so to speak, but I'm going to go with basketball and Mario Lemieux.
It's funny because, like, I understand Pittsburgh and Mario Lemieux. It's pretty tight, but Wayne Gretzky's still the greatest hockey player of all time. I'm sorry. Assist alone.
I agree.
Blows someone out of the water. But I don't know. More of a country music guy myself. I would say Shania Twain if we're throwing out some Canadian artists there. So just another one.
Little fun fact that the live chat would never have guessed. I actually saw Wayne Gretzky play hockey live.
Wow. In L.A., I'm guessing.
I saw him in L.A. I saw him when he was an old man with the Kings. So I actually saw the great one. I don't think he scored a goal or anything, but I did actually see him play. But let's shift to football stuff. The big football news, of course, that was announced today was that the NFL has limited the preseason to two games, and I believe they're going to play the first and the fourth preseason game. Now, you said that Adam Schefter came out with another announcement after that initial announcement. And what was that announcement, Mike?
So if I can load up the tweet quickly here, I believe I have it. He retweeted at the Kid McManus, who did say, be ready for one or zero preseason games, but it won't be two. That was retweeted by Adam Schefter. That's potentially huge. And honestly, I think the biggest thing to come in all this, I have no expectation on this rookie class. I don't know about you. If Chase Claypool has zero receptions, I don't care. I'm not judging him on his 2020 performance. The kid's just not going to be in the field before week one. Do you have any thoughts on that, Lance?
I think that's the biggest issue with a lack of the preseason is that you can't expect anything from the rookies. I agree from you 100%. Anything you get from the rookies is just gravy at this point. But do you think there's a position group that is impacted the least by no preseason games or a limited modified training camp? In my mind, I think running back. I think the running back position is probably affected the least unless you're asking your running back to play on third down and be responsible in pass protection. I kind of think like running backs, because a lot of it is instinctive, that if you can read your block wells and be dynamic and stay healthy, that you can contribute without some of the nuance that some of the other positions may need in terms of reps and time and so on and so forth. But what position group do you think might be impacted the most if there's only two preseason games or if there are no preseason games?
Now, I could be super lazy and just say a quarterback is Big Ben that barely even plays in the preseason. But, of course, you'd want to work that timing with the receivers when it came to camp practices. But I'll throw out the pass rushers in Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt. Obviously, they kind of just work their game. The play calls aren't super intense for those kind of interior seven. What they're doing, there's a lot of instinctual stuff when it comes to twists and stunts. They've been a part of the system for, 4 and 5 years now? Or I guess 6 and for Bud Dupree's behalf. So they've been in it. They get it. I'm not super concerned on those guys, especially because how talented they are. If I had to throw out another one, just because how much they've worked together over a long time, is the offensive line. I guess it really just kind of boils down to that right tackle position if Matt Filer truly is going to play that guard spot. But I have no worries because their chemistry is kind of what made them such a good unit across the entire NFL.
That's a good point you bring up. If they don't play any preseason games, and right now they're at 2, they're supposed to report to camp at the same time. If they don't play any preseason games, do they still make that switch? Because that's 2 moves, right? That's the move into left guard, and then you have to find a new starting right tackle. My thought is, in this sort of topsy-turvy thing that we call football today in the midst of a pandemic, why make 2 changes instead of just slotting in Wisniewski, the veteran, and making just 1 change? why so much flux in a time of flux? Do you think it still works well, or do they do it with the limited amount of games that they may play in the preseason?
I think it works because Matt Filer has a ton of experience at guard, and I think that's even where he started last training camp. So in that sense, I'm not super worried about making two shifts just because Filer's going to be on that field no matter what, and I think he knows the guard spot, which I do believe he did play at least one game last year, and he knows the tackle spot.
He played against the Rams.
Right. So I think he'll be fine either spot. I think the competition might really boil down to who's more prepared. It might not just be between the right tackles, but if Wisniewski proves he can play guard and learns the offense quickly, then you might as well leave Filer out there and make it kind of a three-way battle. Filer goes to whatever spot isn't needed. Whoever gets it the best, that's kind of, I think, where you could put Matt Filer. It's kind of tough on him to kind of know both positions, but it's possible, and he's done it before. So I am confident in this offense being able to run out whichever O-line five-man front that they have at their disposal.
My concern is Chuck Banner, and I'm putting both of those guys together and making them one name. My concern is Chuck Banner. That's Chooks and Zach Banner. My concern is that they're both young players with limited snaps. That's, they both need a ton of snaps, and they need to play game speed, and they need a bunch of reps, and they need to play. I think that's an issue, you know, with this offensive line, given the fact that they may cut preseason games. But let's jump to the topic of the program, and it's, what are the biggest missing pieces on the Steelers roster? Now, you can go in any direction. You can go offense, you can go defense. I even elicited some of the responses from Bad. Let's start with you, Mike. What's your number one?
I think the number one issue. When I've been kind of sitting on this all day, I think the number one kind of shifted around, but I think the biggest missing piece is that explosive playmaker on offense. They have a ton of guys that are serviceable. You could arguably say they have four number two wide receivers, depending on how Chase Claypool performs. James Conner's, he's yet to break 1,000 yards. He did make that Pro Bowl, and I am a bit of a James Conner guy, but he isn't that 1,500 yard running back. They don't have a receiver that's going to go over 1,500. Juju got close in the past, but I don't think he's doing that in 2020 without a number one ahead of him. So I think they're kind of missing the guy that kind of forces teams to double that person, making the rest of the offense more wide open.
I agree with you, and I'm going to say it even more simply than you just said it. You were so eloquent in that answer. I'm just going to say this. Mr. Gummy Richards is no longer on the team. Mr. Third and Fifth is no longer on the team. As much as we knocked him, Antonio Brown, on this show, famously I got blocked on Twitter. Former guest and host of this show with me, Jeff Hartman, got blocked on Twitter. I'm assuming everybody on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com got blocked by Antonio Brown, and I took it as a badge of honor. Antonio was a whale of a player. He did draw double coverage, and he did allow Juju and James Washington to work one-on-one. And he was the gravity. It's a concept that you use in basketball, where players create gravity. They attract other players, in turn creating space for other players to do their thing. And I think you're right. Like, let me ask you this way. Who scares you on the Steelers offense? Is there any one individual where you worry at night as a defensive coordinator and you're getting night sweats? Like, I don't know what we're going to do to stop this guy. Who scares you on the Steeler offense? There's no one in particular that scares me.
You know, I think if Deontay Johnson can continue to develop, he is kind of that route tree god type player that Antonio Brown was. So that's possible. But I think if Chase Claypool can be someone, the combination of him and Eric Ebron, I think if I'm a defensive coordinator trying to game plan this team, it's how do I stop these two behemoths? They are gigantic players. And even if Vance McDonald can be healthy, the trio of those three humongous dudes, you just don't have players to cover that amount of beef on that on your defensive side. So I think it comes down to how you're game planning the three big guys on the Steelers offense is what would concern me the most as a defense coordinator.
I'm disappointed, Mike. I was trying to tee you up with the Canada question in terms of the best thing to come out of Canada. And I just knew you were going to say Matt Canada. Come on, man. I tried to tee you up. You did not say Matt Canada. I don't know if he's from Canada, but his name, he has Canada in the name.
I think I might even put a tweet out this morning. I'm not sure. I think I wish Matt Canada happy Canada, but he, matter of fact, is not Canadian. So, you know, honorary, he can come celebrate. He can have a couple Molson Canadians on me. We'll have some fun. A couple, you know, just do it the Canadian way.
When you have Canada in your name, you are Canadian. You are really Canadian.
Oh, yeah.
You are absolutely Canadian. Let me give you, in no particular order, so I'm going to mark yours off. No offensive star power. And mine goes back to what we were talking about with the offensive line. They don't have a very good young offensive lineman. One of the things that's an issue on this team is the age of the offensive line. Yes, it's seasoned. Yes, they've played a long time together, but Al is old, Pouncey's old, DeCastro's getting old, Wisniewski is getting old. They don't have a young guy that's ready to come in, take names, pancake people, and be that dominant next young offensive lineman like they had in Pounce, like they had in David DeCastro. They don't have that guy. And so as Ben gets older, and I firmly believe that Ben is going to be here for another three seasons, because I don't think the Steelers are going to give up on that defense and the opportunity that that defense gives them to win a seventh championship. But I just don't think they have that next very good, young, dominant offensive lineman.
Interesting. You don't think Dotson is someone that could develop into that spot? Or
I have to see. Maybe I won't say that next year. But for instance, like Marcus Gilbert, you know, when they drafted Marcus Gilbert, he started right away, became that young, very good player. Unfortunately, he got injured. But Marcus Gilbert was a dominant right tackle, was one of the best right tackles in football. Just ask that guy up in Denver that couldn't get around him when they played Denver all the time. So do you think they have a dominant young offensive lineman that they can hang their head on right now? Or do they just have developmental players and pieces?
You know, I think this is going to be one of the bigger needs moving forward outside of when Big Ben is finally hangs up his cleats. Depending on what Dotson does, of course, he's a fourth-round pick, so you can't really put too many eggs in that basket. But he has looked good on tape. I think he could be a dominating run defender. But I think, obviously, with the aging unit, we already saw Ramon Foster, his career winding down. Stefan Wisniewski isn't a young guy either. I think he's already the third oldest guy on the team. Alejandro Villanueva, I think, is also tied for that third, or maybe even... No, he is third because Tyson Alualu is second oldest on the team. So you're right. This is an aging unit, and they absolutely, coming down the pipeline here, will have to start making some changes, have to start injecting some youth into that position group. But as for right now, I don't think they do have that guy. And if I had to put Kem Dotson at guard, I'd be a little worried, especially because of everything that's going on right now.
Let me jump into the one that Bad gave, and that's Brian Anthony Davis. Big up to you. He said experience and depth at inside linebacker, and that kind of chimes in. Well, I'll kind of save mine for later. But what's your thought when Bad says experience and depth at the inside linebacker position?
Well, you look at it, and you look at the breakdown of how the Steelers tend to bring their linebacking core into the regular season. They usually bring nine guys, and right now it only seems like there's three inside linebackers that can make this team. Devin Bush and Ulysses Gilbert, namely, 2 years experience once the season starts. Vince Williams, obviously, he's got a bit more, but he's not the guy you want on the field in those passing situations. Who is the fourth guy? Is it Robert Spillane? Like that's kind of the name that's jumping out to me right now as the fourth inside linebacker. They could carry six and maybe make TJ play inside bit like he did in his rookie and sophomore seasons, but I think that takes away from his game. So I think if they're going to bring one more guy in during this offseason, maybe why not like a Nigel Bradham? There are guys available that can help this team. Even bringing back a Mark Barron on a more favorable contract. I know some people might bite my head off for that, but Bad's right. They just don't have that depth, and it is a little worrisome. If one guy gets injured, what happens? There's no one there. Like, are you going to make Vince Williams play every single third and long? Because if I'm an OC, I'm like, that's the guy I'm throwing the ball at, and I'm just throwing slants over top of Vince Williams, and they're picking up.
Yeah, that's the candy bar. I'm killing you with the skinny post. He's the candy bar. He's the Snickers, the Twix, the Baby Ruth, the Juju Bees, the Starburst. He's everything. You can get anything you want with Vince Williams in sub-package football. I think bringing Barron back is solid. I've said that on the show numerous times, and I think it makes even more sense to bring Barron back in this pandemic. He already knows the defense. They know him. They know how to best utilize him. And the players are familiar with playing with him as well. They know his game. They know what he can do. They know how to compensate for playing with him to cover his defaults and to maximize his strengths. So I think Barron comes back. But to Bad's point and to your point, I think that is a significant issue. Give me your number two in terms of biggest missing pieces on this roster.
What about safety depth? Just moving back a little bit further. I think this team's loaded at corner, but then behind Minkah Fitzpatrick and Terrell Edmonds, you got Jordan Dangerfield, you got Marcus Allen, Antoine Brooks Jr. I think if there's an injury, I think they're looking towards Cam Sutton or Mike Hilton. You're just pulling them out of the corner side. One injury there, and even two, that's a big issue. Like, expecting both guys to play 16 games another year in a row, that is a lot, especially in the NFL, especially when they're not going to have as much time to be prepared. So I think that's another spot. If they're looking to bring someone in, why not like a Rashad Jones? He has experience playing with Minkah Fitzpatrick, and he's still available. The guys out there aren't going to cost a whole heck of a lot, so I think that unit probably could also use another name. And Steelers still have $5 million in cap. Why not chase two veterans and be like, look, this team is kind of loaded. We're ready for a run. Do you want a chance at the Super Bowl? Come on in. And if that's the case, then maybe a couple UDFAs aren't making this team. But that's whatever. Like, this team would be better for it. And I think that's a move they should make.
Alfred Fujisaki asks, what about Cam Kelly?
Well, I think Cam Kelly is still battling that kind of terrorist charges or whatever that he was going on. The threat of, because he was cut from the team after a bomb threat, I believe it was. I think that's when he was cut. I'm pretty sure that's what went down. So he's not on this team. Yeah.
Wow. Al Qaeda Cam. Wow. Like a terrorist bomb threat. Well, I don't know. Well, he's a bomb threat in two ways, maybe to drop a bomb or get a bomb thrown over his head. So either way, the Steelers probably won't be having Cam Kelly back. But I think you're spot on 100%, and I hate to agree with all the points that you're making, but you're right. They're super thin at the safety position, and that's an issue. And I think with this pandemic, again, I think it'll be easier for guys like you and me to connect the dots if teams go out and get free agents. It'll be guys that have a familiarity with the coaching staff for a particular team. You can just line it up. So if there's a safety out there that's either familiar with a player who can vouch for him or a player that understands the Steelers scheme, what they're trying to do, and who's a smart player that can pick up on the verbiage because of that experience, that's the type of person that they'll bring in. But I think you're right. If you get an injury at the safety position, they're going to go out and get one on free agency because I don't think they have that replacement on the roster. But one big thing that is never mentioned when we talk about Edmonds is that I don't think Edmonds has missed a game yet.
No, I don't think he has, to be honest with you. I think he might have missed one at the very beginning. No, he didn't because Morgan Burnett, he was injured with that ankle injury. I think he might have been a starter from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I believe he's played about 2,200 snaps. I mean, he plays typically the most snaps on defense because he plays in every sub package. So he plays the most snaps. He's never coming off the field. So, I mean, luckily for the Steelers, they've been incredibly durable at that position. But again, depth at the safety position is an issue. Let me give you my number. Let me give you one of my big things in terms of missing pieces on the roster. A lack of talent at the running back position after James Conner. And I don't think James Conner in and of himself is a great talent. I think he's a hard worker. We see that on IG. We see when he stays healthy, he can be a serviceable, productive back, but he's not as good as any of the other starting backs in the division. You know, you look at Cleveland is stacked. So I think, and you look at the talent behind him, again, it goes to your number one point about no offensive star power. So I think there's a talent deficit after James Conner, and that's a big missing piece on this roster.
They have a lot of names, but it seems like the talent, if to sum it up with a letter grade, the talent of the Steelers' backfield's about a C. You know, like McFarland, I suppose, is the name we don't really know, but like you kind of see what you have in that backfield. You know, Benny Snell is running inside the tackles, and I believe you call him Benny No Jets. I don't.
No Jets.
There you go. He's not picking up 20-yard chunks. And then when you look at Jalen Samuels, he really regressed. And he might even be out of a job after this year's training camp. Kareth White might even be the guy that takes his job from him. So it's going to be really interesting, and I think they need to continue to add it at that position.
Let's speak to this point because we were just talking about safety depth. And Dave Shipley, big up to Dave Shipley. He said, listen to Mike Tomlin. He said, all of our guys are capable of filling in the safety role. The defensive backs are all interchangeable. Here's my point with that. You don't want any of the corners to not play corner. That's how good the corners are and the group is. That group of four corners is arguably, in my opinion, the best cornerbacks in the National Football League. If you don't think they are, the only team I think that would possibly be better would be the New England Patriots. They are very good at cornerback. You don't want the corners playing safety. So I think the issue still is that you don't have quality backups. And when your coach is saying all those guys are capable of playing, and that means they don't have one. They don't have a quality backup. If you're saying that any of these other guys can play it, that means because they don't have one.
Yeah, you know, something that has been really frustrating to me is looking at that safety position over a number of years now. And could you imagine that 2017 team that went 13-3 if they had Trey Boston, who was on a nothing deal, the one-year deal, and on the Chargers at the time? And Blake Bortles probably wouldn't be dropping dimes over him in that wild card game. You know, that's just one of the things. This team's been super stubborn when it comes to looking at free agents at those depth positions. So I would love for them to make a move. I know that's not the philosophy, and it probably won't happen, but a move or two like that, and maybe we're talking about a completely different season the last number of years.
Let me throw this out, and I know this is not going to happen. This is just me throwing this to you and just throwing it against the wall. Just imagine how better they would be in terms of safety depth if they could retain and sign Sean Davis to a very cheap bottom basement deal.
No, you absolutely.
You're totally better at that point. Sean Davis is awesome playing cover one, right? He had great range because he had the ability to play slot corner, and he had great range. So if either one of those guys, I mean, he's better than any backup that they would have. And so you would feel much better if Minka or Edmonds got hurt, if you were able to go and have Sean Davis as a backup on your team. But that might be a question. I don't want to tease the interview, but that might be a question that you might want to ask in your interview is about, about said depth. But let's jump into your next missing piece on the roster.
You know, I wanted to take the third one. I think there's some other spots that might be more noteworthy, but I think for this spot, I wanted to do something that is in the background, and that's incompetent punting. I think this team unfortunately for Jordan Berry, he's kind of been all over the board. And when teams starting on their own 20 versus on their 40 or midfield, that's huge. Like, the punting game is big. And there was a couple times, sure, Jordan Berry started 2019 a little bit better than, of course, that terrible all-around kicking year of 2018. But unlike Chris Boswell, who finished the year strong, Jordan Berry kind of fell off a cliff, and he was kind of sporadic with his placement of the ball. And I like, why not just add something, a little bit more competition? They just brought in an undrafted free agent, and I believe his career average is Waitman, I believe, is the number two punter's name. I think his career average in NCAA was 41.8 yards. So that's not kicking Jordan Berry off the roster, but I think that's the way they should look.
And big up to you, Andrew Wilbur. He agrees. Yes, punter is a huge need, and I have to bring this up with Dave Shipley again, and it goes back to our point when we're talking about the running back position. And I did famously say, we don't pay Ben to hand the ball off. Yes, you said it, Lance. And that's right. And Ben is not going to come back and hand the ball. Ben's going to come back and slang that thing. And we guys are we're probably going to be praying that Ben hands the ball off, because Ben is trying to get it back and get it back quickly. And I think the biggest elephant in the room, and Bad brought this up in terms of the missing piece, is backup quarterback experience. Now, me and Dave, big up to Dave Schofield, the Oracle, the editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, we go back and forth in terms of the lack of a veteran presence outside of Ben Roethlisberger in the quarterback room. And Dave points out that, you know, I guess for chemistry reasons, they don't want another veteran in the room. Chemistry, skimmistry. I don't care about chemistry. I'm a fan of the team. I would like them to win a seventh championship. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that I'm a rocket scientist, but dare I say, if Ben Roethlisberger gets hurt and they're playing Mason Rudolph, if they're playing Duck Mason, again, I'm going to combine the two, they're in trouble. And, you know, people laughed at me when I talked about Jameis Winston. People laughed at me when I talked about Cameron Jarrell Newton, who's now playing for that dreaded team up north that we don't like to say their names. I mean, what can you say, Mike? I don't know if I can say anything more. I mean, the backup quarterback position, I just don't understand it.
I'll give Mason Rudolph a little bit of credit. His best game was against the Jets before he broke his collarbone, but that's dink and dunk football, which I don't think this offense is built for. So I am a fan of bringing in competition, and I wrote some articles, and some fans wanted my head on a silver platter, but I still believe that they should probably add some depth. And if they want youth, I think there's someone out there. Why not trade for Josh Rosen and make him compete with Mason Rudolph for that number two spot? Why not? Like, literally, two is there. Ryan Fitzpatrick's there. Josh Rosen's their number three. I believe they traded a second round pick for him. There's no way he's going to be worth more than a fourth. And he was 10th overall in 2018. Why not? Honestly, why not?
Yeah, I don't understand it. And I wanted to find Mule Skinner. He said, get your ducky hat ready, Lance. In fact, I already have a ducky hat. I already have a Duck Dynasty camouflage dealer hat, and I will wear it on the next program. But I've argued for Josh Rosen, because the difference between Rosen, Mason, and Duck is, like you said, Rosen was a top 10 pick. Rosen has always had a higher pedigree than both of those players. High school, college, everything, coming into the pros, his pedigree and his high end was always considered better than those two guys. I mean, the backup for the Steelers, one of the guys wasn't drafted, and the other guy we've seen. What is he most known for? Getting hit in the head with a helmet. And that's not getting tackled. That's from a brawl. getting hit in the head with a helmet. I mean, if you go down to and get your Molson Golden tonight, and I hope you don't, and stay safe and get it delivered to you via DoorDash if they got DoorDash. They probably don't have DoorDash in Canada. They probably can't deliver alcohol anyway. Probably get arrested. Oh,
we can. It's on Skip. We're good. We're good. We're set.
There you go. So when the guy delivers your fresh Molson Golden as you celebrate National Canada Day, ask him, has he ever heard of Mason Rudolph? And if he has, he'll say, yeah, it's the guy that got hit in the head with a helmet, right?
Absolutely. That's probably exactly what you're going to hear.
It's like, so I just don't get it. It doesn't make any logical sense. No matter what they say in terms of trying to explain it, don't believe it. And it really doesn't make sense when you have a guy coming off of Bionic Ben, coming off of an elbow surgery. It really doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense to do that. Now, speaking of the quarterback position, let me jump into this comment. Albert Fujisaki said, Paxton Lynch hasn't gotten a chance either, really. I don't really know much about Paxton Lynch other than he sucked in Denver. I mean, that's pretty much all I know about Paxton Lynch. I do know he was a first-round draft pick, but he stunk. Is Paxton Lynch possibly a guy that can break into this trifecta, it seems, of guaranteed quarterbacks for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the quarterback room?
You know what? I think as training camp shrinks, the chance of him making this team also drop. Before all this went down, I thought Paxton Lynch could even beat out Duck Hodges to be that number three QB on this roster, especially because he has the intangibles. He has the size. You look at him. He's what? 6'6", handsome, tall, dark, everything you want in a quarterback. Or am I thinking the Bachelor? But he's a huge arm. He is the prototype of what you want. And then you look at Duck Hodges, he's short, he's kind of pudgy, he doesn't have a big arm. It's easy to fall in love with Paxton Lynch over Duck Hodges. So I totally think he's a guy that could make this team. But you're totally right. He hasn't done it. He also is from a small school. And then the last we saw him play, he couldn't win that backup quarterback job in Seattle, and they arguably have the worst backup QB room in the NFL right now. So that's a little worrisome. So I don't think he is the guy that is going to be a quarterback of the future, but he could be a fun name to have as a third string and maybe work some reps in practice, being kind of that game plan quarterback. But I'm not holding my hopes up too high on him, except for the fact that he has all those intangibles.
Now, let me jump into this comment. TA Digital, let me jump into the other comment. That's what he said, that Rosen has historically the lowest QBR in history. Now, I'm a Cal grad. If you know anything about the relationship between Cal and UCLA, let me just explain it really quickly. We are the Golden Bears. They are the Bruins. They're baby bears. We're the big bear. We're the Bruins. Like, they're Bruins. We're the Bears. Our colors are dark blue and gold. Their colors are light blue and gold. You guys are sensing a pattern here, right? Our fight song is the same as their fight song. So when actually we play football games against each other and each team scores, you don't know who's scoring if you're at the concession stand, because the fight songs are the same. It is so frustrating. So I have no love for UCLA. With that all being said, Rosen's got to be better than Duck Hodges. Hey, I mean, he has to be better than Duck Hodges. He has to be a little more talented. I just, again, the lack of a quality backup with an older quarterback coming off of a season-ending injury in the last third in the stretch run of his career is really frustrating, especially when you have this defense that is ready to win a championship. They just need 25 to 27 points a game, and the Steelers will have that seventh ring. I just don't understand it, Mike. I don't get it. Can you please talk me off of a ledge that maybe one of these guys will develop at some point?
The absolute only thing I can think of is that this team is so confident Ben Roethlisberger is going to be 100% and his chance of injury is basically zero, of re-injury, I should say, then it doesn't make any sense to me either. I feel like in a situation like this, you have someone. Look at the Patriots when Brady tore his ACL. Matt Castle proved he was an NFL quarterback and he was still there for a year. They didn't get rid of him then. They waited that until his contract expired. They didn't trade him. He was signed to the Chiefs. So I think you absolutely have to carry. It doesn't even have to necessarily be a veteran guy, but someone with a little more experience. I think it's just smart football. Like, I'm sorry, Ben, you don't want a veteran guy sitting beside you, but he's not going to play unless you're hurt. So don't complain.
Just don't share the playbook with him or something. Like, hack his tablet, you know, give him a root virus error or something. but unfortunately, we can't get Bad's favorite backup quarterback that is now playing for the Cleveland Browns. But let's jump into the super chat and let's bring it up here. Let me just double click it here. I don't know if we can see it up here, but George Teston asked a question. Do any of you guys think Colin Kaepernick could be a quality quarterback in the National Football League? Why don't you go first, Mike? Why don't you answer that?
You know, I would love to tell you yes, but the more time you spend out of the NFL, the worse you get. It's just a matter of fact that when guys aren't playing in the league, they regress. They regress quickly each and every year. I'd have to see it to believe it. I know he's working out, but like, that's still not NFL reps. If he's good enough, sure, why not? You know, at the very least, I guess he could replicate Lamar Jackson in practice, because running quarterbacks, that would just be good. That'd help the defense. But like, I guess you'd have to work him out, and it's really hard to have not seen him throw a ball in, what, 4 years now? Might even be more than that. So I would hesitate to throw my eggs in the basket of a quarterback who hasn't thrown a professional or any level pass, for that matter, in over 1,200 days. That's concerning to me, and it's probably not a route I would go. But if Kaepernick can go, I'm someone who's willing to give him a shot.
Now, I think the key word in George's question is quality. I think he can be a quarterback in the National Football League. I don't think he can be a quality quarterback in the National Football League because of what you said. There are so many bad quarterbacks in the National Football League. You could just throw him like a log on a stack of logs that you have in the back of your cabin. He could just throw him in a pile of the wood with the rest of the bad quarterbacks, because there's a ton. I mean, honestly, there's probably only 12 good quarterbacks, you know, in the world. So, you know, you just add him to the list of other bad quarterbacks in the National Football League. So I think he can play in a league. I don't think he'd be a quality quarterback. I don't think he'll ever be the dynamic player that he was. I think it's to your point. I didn't realize it had been like 1,200 days. Wow, that's like, what, about 3.5 years, somewhere around there?
Yeah, I think it's been longer than that.
So, yeah, I think that's done. I think that ship has sailed. The other thing is, when you start making money without being able to get hit in your head, you tend to keep making money without getting tackled and hit in your head, unless the hits in your head have really made you loopy. So, you know, he's making good bread. I mean, he has a platform. He's done it. I mean, I don't see him playing in the National Football League again. Let me jump into the question from Kathy Fareed. Big up, Kathy. Great friend of the program. Has Duck reached his ceiling?
I would say yes. He doesn't have a big arm. Sorry, Devlin. I'm sure you're a nice guy. I'd love to have you on the show. I'd love to chat. You know what? Yeah, I just can't see anything more. He played FCS. He's not very tall. Like, he's not very fast. Like, just everything's kind of not in his favor, other than he kind of just provided a spark, and every dog has his day, and it just happened to be Devlin Hodges' first day on the field. He looked good, and then each week that passed that went by, he just kind of got worse and worse. If it wasn't for that one long touchdown throw, I believe against San Fran or whatever, when he came in, I don't really know like what we'd see. Like, I'm not a huge Duck future kind of guy. I think we've seen the most out of him.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to have a ceiling, you know, when you're laying on the floor. I think, I think Duck is, his talent is what it is. I mean, it's commendable. I think it's a great story of a guy overcoming, you know, his physical limitations to play at the highest level. I mean, I've never played pro football. Many of us never will, never have a chance or never even close to having the talent to play in the National Football League. So he's to be commended for that. But when we're talking about the elite level of the National Football League, he's just not that. As a third string guy, maybe, but he's just not an elite player. Let me jump into this question from Russ Obstein, and it went to you. As you were talking about a little bit about special teams when you were talking about the punt game, Russ said, my biggest issue is we need a better return game and get better field position. I'm hoping this year we will always get lousy field position, and other issues is ball security. So it speaks a little bit to the punt game. How big is, you know, field position, particularly with a dominant defense, for this team this year? Let's say Jordan Berry and the former co-host of the show, Jeff Hartman, hated, and I call it Jeff Joy because Jeff was pretty positive about everything. One of the only things that Jeff was negative about was Jordan Berry, and that says a lot. If Jordan Berry somehow becomes a very good punter, which I don't believe, how much of an impact will that have on this team?
Oh, with this defense, I think it takes that, like, the points against average. It might even bring it down around 10 points a game. Do you think teams are running 90 yards down the field on this defense? Absolutely not. Like, I suppose Baltimore, because they got Justin Tucker, who can kick damn near 70 yarders, then sure, they'll probably score still if they can get the ball to 40. You're not getting the end zone. Not with this defense. Not 90 yards each and every drive. I think if they could get some great punting play, then it only makes this defense more dangerous, and it's going to cause even more turnovers.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, long field. I mean, you know, Dick LeBeau philosophy, Dick LeBeau style. He's like, look, if we can make you drive at 80 all the time to score, you're not. The odds are you're not. You know, we keep the ball in front of us. We don't give up big plays. We play field position. We'll get you off the field eventually. And that says that, you know, the Steelers, the way they play football. Let me just ask you this question, going back to that question. Do you think the way they play football offensively looks a little bit different because they have a dominant defense? And I'm not saying that they're going to run the ball 55, 60% of the time. Ben throws it 20 times a game with 15 completions. I'm not saying that. But in terms of play distribution, because they have a dominant defense, do you think they will be a little bit more balanced and not like 70-30, 70% pass, 30% run?
I would love to tell you yes, that they're going to be more balanced, but I think this comes to Big Ben. He's going to be like, no, I'm not calling your plays. You're not cutting me. I'm throwing the ball, because he loves to throw the ball. I don't think it's going to change too much. I think when you'll see that kind of philosophy shift is in the fourth quarter, if they're up 14, 20 points, if that's the spreads we're looking at. I think they'll start running the ball more then. But based on who is kind of the gem of this offense and who really kind of calls the shots, I can't see a world where Big Ben's just going to let that happen. I think that they're still going to be a predominantly pass-heavy team, especially the way this roster's been built. Tons of receivers, tons of big tight ends, an O-line that's, I'd say, is better in the passing game and outside runs. So I think this team is really kind of built towards throwing the ball.
And let's just say, and this is a fact, Ben Roethlisberger went to Kevin Colbert and talked to him about getting Eric Ebron. He didn't go ask for a running back. He went and asked for a big athletic tight end that could run the seams. We all know it. Big Ben didn't get that elbow fixed to hand the ball off. I mean, he just didn't. He didn't get his body possibly in the best shape that he can to hand the ball off 35 times. It would be great if he channeled his inner seven and tried to be like his mentor, John Elway, who kind of let the offense become more Terrell Davis. But that ain't happening with Big Ben. Here's a question from Snowman. Thank you, Snowman, for the $5. Do you think Jordan Berry will be the Steelers punter at the end of camp?
I will want to tell you no, but I think the answer here is yes, just based on who they have on the roster. Camp is shrinking. Each and every day, off the top of the show, right now it sounds like two preseason games. Adam Schefter's retweeting stuff saying it's going to be one or less in terms of the preseason. So I think Jordan Berry's going to be this punter. Unfortunately, I would love to see them just go out and try to steal Pat McAfee off his show. I don't know if he'll do it. I think he's making some good coin. I think it'd be fun. He's a Pittsburgh native. Why not? Like, why not just add some competition? Get one of those Colquitt brothers. I can't remember which one's a free agent, the one from Kansas City. Why not? I want them to add depth, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think the pandemic is really going to, I mean, really threaten what you can do in terms of modifications and tinkering with your roster. I mean, it's just going to be really tough. And before we get out the show, make sure you like the show. Make sure you subscribe. Hopefully we're at 6,000. We got to get to 6,000 subscribers. I was hoping for my 50th birthday, we would get to 6,000 subscribers by July 1st. We did not do that. You can still give me a 50th birthday gift by us getting to 6,000 by the end of July. Come on now. Let's get to 6,000. We can do it. Make sure you hit the like button. I don't think we're going to have preseason. I think we're not going to have preseason. And if we have no preseason games, and you can just answer it if you want or however you want to answer it, what's the impact of that going into the regular season? What do you think this regular season is going to look like? I'm firmly in belief that there will be a regular season. I am now in the camp because of the ads in the stands and using real estate in the stadium to sell ad space and generate ad revenue that way. I don't think there will be fans in the stands this year.
You know what? I think if there is no preseason whatsoever, I think we're going to see the rookies do virtually nothing. And I think as fans, we need to just, we can't just rag on them. Why destroy their confidence for stuff that's completely out of their hands? So I think we're going to see the rookies kind of do virtually nothing. I hate to say it, but that's what it's going to boil down to. I think we're going to see the more lame teams struggle, and there's going to be a lot of sloppy football, tons of turnovers, the most button up teams. And thankfully, I think the Steelers are, just because this roster has been together for a long time, the more button up teams are going to shoot to the top, and they're going to shoot it fast.
I agree with you, and big up to you, Miles Mule Skinner. We love you, although you have $1.99 in your checking account and you can't contribute. I would suggest that you use that last $1.99 and get a Molson Golden to celebrate Canada Day. Get you a Molson Golden and drown your sorrows away in a nice frosty cold brew. Yes. Mike, actually, if Mule hits you with his address, you should send him a Molson Golden. You should do that. But before we get out of here, Mike, you got anything you want to tease for the website? Anything that's coming up this week? I didn't let it out the bag, but you know, if you want to tease what you told me that's coming up this week.
There's two things, and I think I will actually go a little bit further with that. Looks like Saturday. I know we don't typically try to release our special guest interviews, but looks like Saturday, trying to hammer out a time. A certain Pittsburgh Steelers safety, no, not that one, nor that one, but Jordan Dangerfield confirmed to me that he'll be coming on the show Saturday. So we'll be hanging out, chatting with him. Also, of course, that is big news. So you got to set your calendars and set an alarm. Make sure you're tuning in for that. But if you haven't already, my Twitter account's right here. I'm running a contest for you guys on Canada Day. I'm giving away a Maple Tron t-shirt. If you want it, want one of these breaking t-shirts, just head over to my account, which is right there, Michael Beck 56. All you got to do is retweet the tweet, and you'll have a chance. It closes tonight at midnight. We're celebrating Canada Day by giving away a t-shirt, so you're welcome to do that. And again, Saturday, Jordan Dangerfield, he just messaged me back saying he's coming on the show. So we're going to have a little bit extra fun to end this week out.
Now, I'm going to celebrate Canada Day. I don't know if I don't know if Johnny Walker is Canadian, but I think I'm going to celebrate with a little shot of Johnny Walker Blue. Yes, I got a little blue Johnny Walker Blue. And if you guys are out there, you guys are scotch drinkers, you know Johnny Walker Blue is, you know, a little top shelf. You know, I'm 50 years old now, so I have to raise the stakes when it comes to my quality consumption of beverages. But with that, I think we're going to get out of here. I think it was a fantastic show. Mike, thank you for jumping on again. You know, enjoy your evening, you know, celebrate it. Get a delivery, maybe some poutine and some Molson Golden, and keep it safe. But with that, we're going to conclude the program. And as always, tune in, tell a friend, and subscribe.